On behalf of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, I would like to welcome all of you, all the devotees, all the guests who have gathered today for this festival. We are really grateful to all of you because you have spared your precious time to come here and participate in this festival of awakening, Chetna. So thank you very much for coming. हिंदी में ट्रांसलेशन पीछे की तरफ है, तो जो हिंदी में सुनना चाहते हैं वो पीछे प्रभुपाद के यहाँ पे ट्रांसलेशन हो रहा है. सो वंस अपॉन अ टाइम अराउंड 1000 इयर्स बैक इन अ टाउन कॉल्ड श्रीरंगम इन साउथ इंडिया there arrived a very, very learned pandit, very learned scholar, and his name was Sarvagya, means he knew everything, all knowledge. He had knowledge about everything. So this pandit, he arrived in Srirangam in a huge palanquin, well decorated palanquin, and he had a huge entourage following him. There were people playing musical instruments, announcing his arrival. And there were people glorifying him. Here comes Sarvagya. He knows everything about everything. So they were glorifying him like that, and this procession continued through Srirangam. Meanwhile, there was one small little boy, a 5-year-old boy by the name Parashar, who later on went on to become a disciple of Sripad Ramanujacharya. But when this incident took place, he was a small boy, 5-year-old child. And he saw this whole procession going and these huge announcements. So Parashar, he immediately ran and took a handful of sand, sand in his hand, and he ran towards this procession. He ran through this whole crowd and went straight to Sarvagya, who was seated on this palanquin. And what did he do? He called out, 5-year-old child, he lifted his hands and he called out to Sarvagya, "If you are Sarvagya, please tell me how many grains of sand are there in my hands. Tell me. Please tell me." So Sarvagya, he was seated on his palanquin and he was all the way just enjoying the, you know, his glorification. Suddenly, he was shocked. He was stunned to see this little child challenging him. So, Sarvagya at that time realized that his claim that he knows everything about everything was false. The child had exposed him to show that there was something which he was ignorant about. Right? So Sarvagya at that time got down from his palanquin. He relinquished his palanquin, he relinquished his entourage, and he fell down at this boy's feet and he said, "You are my teacher." Because he realized that he is ignorant about so many things. So when we come to here, if we think we know everything, then we will never take in anything. So the topic today is cutting the knot of ignorance, means there is something we are ignorant about. So we will try to discuss understanding that there is something we are ignorant about. Yes? So the first thing that we need to understand is, what is ignorance? Anyone? What does ignorance mean? Yes? Please don't feel scared. Just speak. Nobody is going to judge whether you're right or wrong, or, you know, nobody is going to say, don't, no, just speak. Anyone, just raise your hands and just speak. What does ignorance mean? Yes. Something we don't know about. Correct? Everyone agrees? Something we are not aware about. That is ignorance. Correct? So, ignorance is a very broad term. If there is a person who is illiterate, for him you write in any script, he is ignorant. You write in any lipi, any alphabet, he is ignorant. Right? But for we who stay in the city, most of us, if someone says that, please teach me how to milk a cow, that is ignorance. Correct? So we can be ignorant about multitudes of things. There are so many things that we are ignorant about. So this ignorance is also called in Sanskrit as ajnana. Ajnana. That is, no, without knowledge is ignorance. Correct? So when there is no knowledge, means it is ignorance. So if you have to remove ignorance, then what you should get in? Knowledge. Correct? If there is knowledge, then there will be no ignorance. So let us just examine, what is the current understanding? What do we actually mean by knowledge? You know, when you generally speak knowledge, current concept, you say knowledge. I want knowledge. What does it actually mean? How do you gain knowledge? Yeah? Normally. Yeah. By reading books, yes. Sorry? Louder? How do you all gain knowledge? Most of your students? Yeah, you all go to schools and colleges, no? For what? Sorry? To gain knowledge. Correct? The purpose of schools, colleges, universities is for what? To give knowledge. Right? They give knowledge and you gain knowledge. Correct? But what is the process of gaining this knowledge? Whatever subject you are enrolled in, you gather information. You may be a student of arts, or you may be a student of, you know, commerce, or whatever, or botany, or zoology, or whatever subject. You gain information. Correct? You collect all that information. So there is gathering of information. And then what do? Just you gather and you leave? No, you store it here. Right? You need to keep on storing it here. Every class you attend, every lecture you attend in school or college, you have to keep on gathering and store. So who is considered to be very knowledgeable? Who can gather more and who can store better? Correct? This data is stored. And then that is not sufficient. But at the time of exam, you should reproduce it perfectly. Yes? You agree with this? So that person is considered to be more knowledgeable. Right? Who can gather, store well, and reproduce perfectly. So it's called very knowledgeable. Very intelligent. Scholar as scholar. Yes? You say that? Right? Scholar as. But let's just go ahead. If you see most people, what is your concept? That he gathers, stores, presents better, scores top marks. He's a topper. Right? So gets a higher percentage, very good percentage. So what happens when one gets a good percentage? Yeah? Gets admission into the best colleges, best universities. So then, if I get admission there, what happens? I get into the best courses, right? And then I will get very high jobs, best jobs, right? And what happens if I get a very good job? I'll be paid very highly. Yes? And that means I will have more money. Yes? And that means I'll be happy. Yes? So this is the current general understanding. Most people think like that. Especially in India, many parents and children feel somehow, you know, we just had our 12th results, 10th results I think are still awaited. But somehow, very high percentage, and somehow I should get into IIT, or you know, there's an entrance for an entrance, and there's an entrance for another entrance, and then somehow you get into some other medical college or something, and then you get into a specialization and then a super specialization, and then somehow my child should reach the United States of America. Yes? And there should get a green card. Yes? And that is the perfection of all knowledge. right from nursery what has started, you know, goes there, and once that's achieved, done. Perfection. Perfection of knowledge, perfection of the whole existence. Correct? This is general understanding. It's not, I mean, we know so many people like that who have this understanding. It's the most popular understanding. So what we need to analyze today is that, is this really true? Is this really true? Everybody is dreaming so much about it, but is this really true? Is this system of education and knowledge, is this content of this knowledge, is the gain of this knowledge really providing what we are all dreaming about? Is it so foolproof that there is nothing lacking in it? So what we'll do is, we'll just go through a few examples and then understand, what is it? Is this knowledge perfect? Is this the perfection? Or is there something else? So for example one, recently, maybe a few days back, the newspapers were carrying headlines of a very, very brutal, very gruesome murder which took place in our city. Now, the most shocking part of this crime incident was that the person who committed it was someone who is very good in his academics. Excellent, always a topper, and was situated in a very high position in his profession. So perfect, right? According to the concept, is perfection. Very knowledgeable, that means. But this person committed this absolutely brutal crime. But what alarmed and shocked the people who were investigating was that after committing this crime, this person did not have any remorse, no regrets. He had got so many degrees and so knowledgeable, etc., etc. But what was lacking? Basic human value. No regrets. Example 2. Few years back, there was a couple. Both were doctors, husband and wife, both doctors with so many degrees, with them, very knowledgeable, highly educated. So they had a quarrel, an argument, as is usual between husband and wife, but they had an argument, and this argument was very heated. So both were extremely angry, and at one point, in a fit of anger, the husband, he lifted their infant baby and he took it to the window and he threatened the wife, if you don't listen to me, I'm throwing this baby down. Can you imagine? And she was equally angry. She said, if you want to do it, I don't care. So imagine what he did, he left the baby down. Knowledgeable people. Okay, and doctors. And the baby went down, crashed to death. And this person, when it happened and he saw the child just falling down from his hands, he realized what he had done. And he was shocked. So what did he do? He jumped down to death. And the wife, she realized what she had done. And she was in a state of shock, totally devastated. What was lacking? With all the years of knowledge, gaining knowledge and education, what was lacking? Basic understanding of a human being. A human being behaves according to time, place, circumstance. Such a huge lack. Example 3. We are all living in an age of international terrorism. global terrorism. You read it in the papers. Terrorism here, terrorism. Earlier, few years back, it was like, there's a bomb blast here, maybe after so many, you know, months and years. But now it's practically every day. No? Every day. It's nothing new. You remove bomb blast there. It's like, you know, so many flies and mosquitoes have died. 100 killed, 200 killed. So it's global terrorism. Right? But what's more shocking about this aspect is that it's explained that most of the people who are committing this are not illiterate people, are not people who don't have anything to eat. They are highly educated professionals, successful academically. They are software engineers and doctors and professors. What is lacking? After years and years of gaining this knowledge, they are lacking the basic human value where they are killing innocent people in hundreds and thousands. So what do we conclude? Of course, there are innumerable examples, but we just to analyze better, we just took up these two, three. But essentially, we need to check out what is real education. What does education actually mean? Does it just mean that you have so many degrees? Or does it mean something else? So all of you, I mean most of you are students. So let me ask you a question. You all say education. What is the meaning of education? Where is the word education derived from? Anyone? We all take education. From nursery, and some have reached 10, some have reached 12, some have reached graduation, some have post-graduation. Right? All of us are in the education system. What? Where? We use the word education so often. But where is it derived from? Anyone? Education is derived from the word, a Latin word called educare. And what does this mean? It means to bring out from within. Okay, that is education. Educare means to bring out from within. So that means education doesn't just mean superimposition of so much data. That may be a part of it, but it is not the whole thing. Just superimposing, you know, information after information from the external sources doesn't just mean education. So now, where do we consult? How to get real education? Anywhere, any source you know? You all must be studying so many courses. Anyone has any textbook which helps you all get information from within? Any suggestions? We need some guidelines, right? Anyone? No. None of these textbooks and none of the schools and none of the colleges and none of the universities can provide us this information from within. So we have to see an alternative. And that alternative is the scriptures. Now, why the scriptures? So, you must have heard this example so many times, but let's repeat it again. Just like if you buy a television, right? Or a washing machine, whatever, any gadget, correct? So, if you get the gadget, is just getting the gadget enough? Just getting it and keeping it in your living room, is that enough? You want it to run, right? And do you want it to run just like that? Or you want it to run efficiently? Utilize every aspect of this gadget? Correct? So if you want that to happen, what do you do? What do you do? Sorry? User's guide. The manual. The manual gives all the information that this is the purpose of this gadget. Right? There's a purpose. Right? Washing machine is used only for washing clothes. You say, oh, I may wash utensils also in this. Does that work? Does that work? No. So who says this is for washing clothes? The user's guide. The purpose of the machine. Correct? How to use the machine? What are the knobs? How do you use it? You can't just, something is not working, so maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. No. So it has a manual. Similarly, we have been given this human body, very precious gadget. Very precious gadget. Correct? So for an ordinary gadget costing thousands of rupees, we are taking so much precaution of going through the manual. This gadget, at least if your television gets spoiled, you can, forget, 20, 30, whatever, thousands is gone, I buy another one. This human, someone goes off, what do you do? So precious. And this human gadget, do you think it doesn't have a manual? It also has a manual. And who gives that manual? Who gives the manual? Sorry? Yes, just like if someone has whatever, LG machine or the LG company gives the manual, right? So here the person who's created is giving the manual. And what is the manual? The scriptures. The bona fide scriptures are the manual. So today, we will consult for our answer. We realize that the popular concept doesn't stand true. Correct? So we will consult what? We will consult the manual. Agreed? Yes? So we will consult the manual. And the manual is the Bhagavad Gita. So now the Bhagavad Gita will explain few principles. Correct? And these principles are actually the source of real knowledge. So we will analyze each of them. You don't have to take my word for it. Correct? So the first principle, first basic principle of Bhagavad Gita. Anyone? Anyone? The basic principle of the Bhagavad Gita is, you are not the body, you are the spirit soul. And the spirit soul is a part of the Supreme Lord. Part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. That's the first basic principle. That we are not this body, we are the spirit soul. And this body is temporary, soul is eternal. Body is made of matter, soul is spiritual. Body will perish, soul is eternal. So I am a spirit soul. You are a spirit soul. We have just taken different bodies. Correct? But the real I am the spirit soul. But now if we see all the education that we have gathered all these years is knowledge of the matter. Correct? It's just knowledge of the matter. There are different perspectives, different aspects. Someone is studying this aspect of matter. Somebody is studying geology. Somebody is just studying medicine. But all matter. Are we studying the knowledge of the soul? No. That is where the knowledge is incomplete. We are not saying the knowledge is wrong. The knowledge is incomplete. There is something lacking. Right? And what is that lacking? The lacking is the knowledge of the soul. So if we don't know the basic principle of who am I in the first place, then how do we expect that our knowledge is complete? So, Sri Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, is a very nice example. That of a parrot and a cage. Yes? You've seen a parrot inside a cage. Correct? Now, if I just sit and analyze all the components of the metal in the cage, I can even draw all the structure of all the atoms and how they are joined and what forces bind them, and then I can tell all metals which are there, and I can even write their chemical structure, and I can tell you what all paints can be used for that cage and I can decorate the cage very nicely. I can spend all my time doing that. All that knowledge I have. But if I don't have the essential knowledge that for the parrot, I have to feed the parrot to be alive, then is there any point? Is there any point in my studying everything about the cage but missing the main person, the parrot? It is not wrong to study the cage, but how can you miss the parrot? So it is not wrong to study matter, but please don't miss the soul. Because we are not this body, we are not matter, we are spirit soul. So Srila Prabhupada, when he went to MIT, MIT is a very prestigious institute in the United States. So he was saying, there are so many departments here. Yes, so many departments. But all these departments are just studying matter. Where is the department to understand and teach the difference between a living body and a dead body? Where is the department? Essentially means, where is the department of the soul? It is the soul which makes the body living and the absence of the soul which makes it dead. Essence. Correct? But we have all departments to study everything, but no department to understand the real person. So he was talking to, Srila Prabhupada was talking to the professor of physics at the University of California. So he was saying that we are not against scientific knowledge. Scientific knowledge is good. But the central point is Atma Jnana, the knowledge of the self. If there is no knowledge of the self, there is no advancement in knowledge. We have made tremendous improvements in the civilization. From bullock cart age, we are into cars and so many high speed devices. But if we don't understand that we are not this body and we are the spirit soul, the basic principle of who am I, then what is the point? What is the point? We are missing the whole point. And if one doesn't know anything beyond this body, how can he do anything beyond it? So he will only work on the bodily level. And what is the bodily level act? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Just four things. Very common. Humans, animals, same thing. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Because he doesn't know anything more than that. We may do so many, you know, inventions and so many advancements, but purpose is only these four. Then what is the great thing that we have achieved? What is the great thing that we have achieved? It is just polished animals. That's all. So with all this knowledge of matter, we need to add the knowledge of the soul. Otherwise, this knowledge is useless. So, that was the first principle. Bhagavad Gita, there are many principles, but we will just enumerate few so we understand better. Yes? The most basic. So, the first principle is, we are not the body, we are the spirit soul. Correct? And the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Principle 2. Is this material world that we are living in is temporary and full of miseries. We cannot find real happiness here. So it is temporary, it is full of miseries. So once it's full of miseries, how can we find real happiness? But you will say, oh, I enjoy sometimes. I'm happy sometimes. I mean, how can you say there's no happiness? So that is compared to a mirage in the desert. The desert, you know what is a mirage? When you are in the desert and the sun is blazing high, it creates an illusion that there is water. Right? And you want water and you keep running. But it's not water, it's just shining sand. Right? It just creates an impression of water. But it cannot quench your thirst. If you go to take the water, what will happen? It's hot sand. Right? So this material world, yes, little relief from miseries is considered happiness. There's no real happiness here. It is temporary and full of miseries. So that is the second principle. The third principle is that the Supreme Lord is the creator, proprietor, and enjoyer of everything that exists. Yes? Supreme Lord is the creator, proprietor, and the enjoyer of everything that exists. Now we see so many beautiful things around us. Okay? So let's consider one example of a rose. You all seen a rose? Huh? Beautiful red rose. Everybody loves roses, right? So if there is a rose, beautiful, nice, fragrant red rose, and a botany student comes and he analyzes the rose, the different characteristic features of the rose and the different parts of the rose. Very good. And he can make out a whole thesis on just a rose. Huh? And then a pharmacology student comes and analyzes all the medical benefits of the rose, the therapeutic benefits of the rose, and so many things. And he can present maybe so many medicines to the world from the rose. And an artist comes, sees the rose, prepares a beautiful painting, exact replica of the rose. He may even get an award for that. But it's just a copy of the original. Minus the fragrance. You can't get the fragrance of the rose. You can't get the touch, the feel of the rose. Everything else is gone. It's just a copy on paper. But he gets an award. So it's very nice that so many things can be done. But the saddest part is that if you ask, who is the one who created this rose? Oh, it must have come by chance. Isn't that foolish? Isn't that absurd? How can something like this come by chance? It just came, some gases mixed, and it just came. How can it come like that? Why don't you try doing this? Just mix some gases and let some beautiful roses come. How can it come like that? So why don't we recognize that creator who has created this beautiful rose? You recognize a person who has just painted a copy of the rose and you give him a big award. But why don't we recognize the person who's created the original rose? Why does it come to, oh, that's by chance, when you ask about the person who created the original rose? Second example. It was just very hot in Bombay, right? Maybe a few days back. Right? So hot. It was so hot, so hot. What were the fruits y'all were eating? Mangoes, eh? Watermelon. Let's just think a little about the watermelon. Huh? What an amazing fruit. Yes? Have you even thought when we bite into that watermelon? What an amazing fruit. What a perfect creator to have created such an amazing fruit in the perfect season. Yeah? Every bite is just nectarian liquid to quench anyone's thirst. Who has done it? Who is that creator? Have you even thought about it? How intelligent? How perfect? But if a scientist comes and he says, oh, very nice, I have written big thesis on watermelon. I've studied for hundreds of years, I mean not hundreds, maybe so many years, on watermelon, and I've done this and genetic this and that and I don't know, so many things. But who has created this original watermelon, sir? Oh, it just came by chance. It's absurd and we believe it. Isn't that ridiculous? When we are following, we just believe it. Oh, my professor said it. It's ridiculous. Why don't we as human beings understand when you're tasting every morsel of that watermelon,
who is that perfect creator?
Shapapad also gives another very, very nice example. He said that the scientists, with their brains, they are making so much of technological advancement. We agree. We fully agree. So much of technological advancement. Yeah, life is made much more easier. Definitely. But who has created the scientist's brain? Did the scientist himself create that brain? Yes? Or did any of his other scientist colleagues implant the brain? No. Right? Who created that brain? So Prabhupada said the Supreme Lord has created that brain. So why don't we recognize that person who has created that brain? And he has the power to create hundreds and thousands of Einstein brains. For him it's not difficult. But we want to recognize only that brain. Give Nobel Prize here, this prize there. But who has given that scientist that brain? Why don't we recognize that person? So this is the third principle. That we recognize the fact that the Supreme Lord is the creator. He is the proprietor. And he is the enjoyer of everything that exists. Principle 4 from the Bhagavad Gita is that a human being is supposed to utilize his life to surrender to the Supreme Lord. After understanding this, he surrenders to the Supreme Lord and performs devotional service. So in the Bhagavad Gita, in the last conclusion, the 18th chapter is explained, Sarva dharmam parityagya mam ekam sharanam praja. Just surrender unto the Supreme Lord. So what does surrender mean? What is the meaning of surrender? If I say, I surrender to my father, what does it mean? Listen to what he says. Correct? Means, you do the will of that person. Correct? Your father, you do what is willed by your father. Your father wills like this, so you do that. Right? So, surrender to the Lord means following the will of the Lord. And how do we understand the will of the Lord? Through the scriptures. The scriptures are the word of God. We understood, right? The manual is from the scriptures. The manual is the scriptures and that's the word of the Lord. So just following this is following the will of the Lord. And what is the process of surrender? Through devotional service. So there are many, many aspects of devotion. But the most important for this age is the chanting of the holy name. Like we were chanting before this class started, right? Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So chanting is an important process of devotional service where we are surrendering to the Lord. So it is explained that actually we are all ignorant. We were prayed earlier, Om Ajnana Timirandasya. We were born in darkest of ignorance, but just by the mercy of the spiritual master that we get this knowledge. This knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, this knowledge of the scriptures. So essentially, we have to understand what are the four principles. May we revise? What is the first thing? We are not the body, we are the spirit soul. Second, material world is temporary and full of miseries. Third, the Supreme Lord is the creator, proprietor and enjoyer of everything that exists. And we, the fourth principle, we as humans have to surrender to that Supreme Lord. Correct? So this is the knowledge that is actually lacking in all the other aspects of knowledge that we gain. So till we add this knowledge, our knowledge is incomplete. Now you must be wondering why we titled this class as Cutting the Knot of Ignorance. Knot. What happens when you get a knot? What do you do if there is a knot? If you tie a knot, what do? You untie it. Right? But how long you can untie it if it is a loose knot? But once the knot becomes tight, then you can't untie it. Correct? Then you have to cut. So, the reason... The reason we have titled this class Cutting the Knot of Ignorance is because all these aspects, if we are ignorant of these principles, then we are bound by these knots. And these knots are very tight. We are bound to this material world by these tight knots. So how do you cut it? Only by the sword of knowledge. Right? If you want to cut something, you need something sharp. Correct? So if we are bound by these knots, we have to cut it. And how? How do we cut this ignorance? By the sword of knowledge. So these are the principles. But you may say, okay, I understood what you are saying, but so what? I mean, why do I need to know all this? Can't I just live? Can't I just be as I am? And, you know, so much of new things you are telling me, but I can't, can't I just be happy like that? Just continue as I am. Yeah, I don't need to. Do I really need to know all this knowledge? Okay, you spoke about character and human values and all, but can't I just be like that? We need to take a nice example that if for your birthday your parents gift you a Mercedes Benz, just imagine, even if you don't really imagine, okay? You'll imagine your brand new Mercedes Benz, sleek car, the best model, okay? And you've got it in your hands, the car is yours, and you drive. You're driving down the road, and you reach a traffic signal, and you just drive past the signal. What happens? What happens? You'll be caught. You'll be fined. Will the traffic policeman say, oh, she's just got a brand new Mercedes, let her just go? Does he say that? No. And if he stops you and he says, you are fined, you broke the traffic signal, saying, what do you mean? This is my car. We paid the money and bought it. I'm driving. What is your problem? Who are you to fine me? Does that work? Huh? Or you say, I never knew there are traffic rules. I didn't know it exists. I just thought you just had to drive. Will you listen to all this? What is he going to say? Ignorance is not the excuse, madam. Please pay. Right? So ignorance is not an excuse even in this human form of life. You may say, oh, I just forget it. You know, it's good. Good knowledge, but I just forget it. No. I was ignorant about it. No. It doesn't work. Just as that car, similarly we've been given this human body. So as you drive through this human form of life, there are rules and regulations. Whether we are aware of it or not, ignorance is not an excuse. Correct? They have to be obeyed. So why it has to be obeyed? Because we are given that human intelligence. A human form of body means human intelligence is given. It is a duty of the human being to understand. At the same time, when he is the traffic policeman has caught you and you see a dog is crossing the red signal, he says, stop, see, why are you finding me? Find that dog. How is he crossing the red signal and you are finding me? What will the traffic policeman say? Huh? There's no fine for the dog, it's fine for you. Why? Why? Because you are the facility of the car. So if you are taking the facility of the car, it is your responsibility to obey the traffic rules. Right? So with facility comes responsibility. So if we have been given this human form of life, then we have been given the responsibility to follow the regulations. We can't expect the cats and dogs because they are not being given this facility. So human life is a facility, but there is a responsibility attached. And their ignorance is not an excuse. And by following these, we are not doing a favor on anyone. It's not that, oh, I'm doing this so, you know, others will be benefited. No! It is every individual's responsibility to follow this, to understand this knowledge and follow it. Huh? Following traffic rules, you're not making any favor for anyone else. Correct? So same applies here. So it's applicable for everyone. It is applicable for everyone having a human form of life. So the scriptures are very blunt in this matter. They explain that if a person doesn't accept this knowledge and cut off his ignorance, then he is nothing but a two-legged animal. Dvipada Pashu. That's all. It's very clear. So now we come to the conclusion of the class. And may I just ask a question before I conclude. How many girls have come today for the first time to the temple? Okay. Thank you so much for coming. And the rest of us, including me, we have been coming here for quite some time. Right? Some maybe for a few months, some maybe for a few years, some maybe, you know, long time. And we must have heard whatever we discussed so far. In fact, maybe thinking, what's new? She's saying the same thing. You're not the body, you're the soul. Material world, no happiness. Same thing. We've heard it countless number of times. Yes? But let us just stop for a minute and question ourselves. How many times after knowing this have we conveniently thought of forgetting it? Just put it somewhere in the background. Yeah, I know. Let it just be there. It's nice. It's nice to hear, you know, Krishna conscious knowledge. Very good. But right now, I have so many other things to do. Right? I have some other priorities. Krishna consciousness is good, but not a priority right now for me. Yes? How many times? So, is it not an extension of ignorance? Correct? We were ignorant, we didn't know. Okay, that is ignorance. But after knowing, we still want to pretend to be ignorant. That is an extension of ignorance. Right? Just like to get up in the morning, you keep an alarm clock. An alarm buzzes. Someone who is sleeping wakes up. Huh? So if someone is really sleeping, it's easier to wake up. But if someone pretends to be asleep, can you do anything about it? Yeah? So awake, but pretends to be sleeping. You can't do anything about it. You just can't do anything about it. Right? So after receiving this knowledge, yeah, from whatever, from devotees or from books, after understanding this real knowledge of the soul, the spiritual knowledge, still, if we think, this is not priority now, let me just continue to be a little ignorant, then this is extension of this ignorance and it is highly unfortunate. It is unfortunate to not have knowledge, but it is very, very unfortunate if after receiving this knowledge, we still continue to be ignorant. So here I would just like to share a small example of one person. This, when I was in school, there was a classmate of mine. He was extremely intelligent. Extremely intelligent, the same scholar, you know, that we say. Perfect. You could, you know, memorize and put it perfectly in his papers, you know. Very, very good at his studies. He actually came from a little poor financial background, but he was excellent. And when the 10th standard exams took place and the results came, he scored a very high percentage. So obviously, he got admitted in one of the best colleges. And again in 12th, he did excellent. So, he got admission into one of the best medical colleges. And he was doing very nice, very good in his studies. But at one point, he came in contact with devotees. So, he got the knowledge of Krishna consciousness along with all his academic knowledge. He used to come to the temple, listen to classes. But he thought, it's good, but not priority now. You know, I have so many other things to do. I have so many other things which are more important. Krishna consciousness is nice, but let it just be. He didn't make it as a priority in his life. So, life went on, but crisis struck. And crisis is inevitable. Whoever we are, whether we know this knowledge, don't know this knowledge, in this material world, what did we say? It's full of miseries. So crisis came, inevitably. And that is his final MBBS. He failed. Can you imagine someone was successful throughout his career? Suddenly he was faced with failure. Huge crisis. He's frustrated. Now, what did he do at this point? He had two options. One was he had the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, what you know he had heard. That was one hand. But he had never kept it as a priority. And second hand, he had other friends who were not devotees, but who were telling him so many other options of how to overcome his frustration. So, guess what he did? Because he had never kept Krishna consciousness priority, he didn't take shelter of it. Though he had got the knowledge, so he knew this knowledge, but he didn't take it as priority. He took shelter of those other friends who guided him, obviously, in deviant ways. So he took shelter of alcohol. He started drinking just to vent his frustration. And he went on drinking to such an extent he became an addict. What do you expect? The next time he appeared for his exam, he again failed. And this happened a couple of times, and it became a vicious cycle. He became a complete alcoholic. Can you imagine the journey of this person? An absolute alcoholic. To such an extent that he went into liver failure. He was admitted, and they were just discharging him. But his state was so bad that he expired. He died. So, this is just an example for all of us to understand that Krishna conscious knowledge, or this knowledge that we are gaining, the spiritual knowledge, is not just an additional information. It has to be our priority. Because crisis will come. And at that moment of crisis, it's not that we're taking Krishna conscious knowledge to avoid crisis. Crisis will come. But what do we do in the face of crisis? What do we take shelter of? We need to take shelter of something. So if we've never kept Krishna consciousness as the priority, we're definitely going to take shelter of some other things. So this is very important. And even if crisis doesn't come, death is there, as sure as death. So time is ticking away. Human life is very precious. The time is very short. Chanakya Pandit explains that every moment lost cannot be got back even by millions and millions of whatever type of wealth. You cannot get it back. And the scriptures explain that with every rising and setting of the sun, we are one day closer to death. So it is very, very important that this knowledge that we are gaining, we just don't keep it as theory. We need to put into practice right away, right now. So please take full advantage of what you're being gifted with. We should all take advantage of this. We've been given a precious human life, and with that, this knowledge. So thank you very much. I thank all of you for your patient hearing. I thank the organizers for giving me a chance to speak. And I also need to thank Srila Prabhupada who actually made this knowledge available to everyone in every part of the globe. So we remain eternally indebted to him. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Big applause for the excellent, excellent presentation. A special, special thank you to His Har Grace Rukmini Mataji for cutting the knot of this ignorance in all our hearts. She is